Hi, welcome to Big Girl Pants Podcast, where we talk about health, wellness, careers, parenting, relationships, and everything in between. I am your host, April Melton. Sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. Welcome back to Big Girl Pants Podcast. Today we have a guest who is very near and dear to my heart, James P. O'Reilly. Oh, Jim O'Reilly. Jim is my former boss and a big impact / mentor in my life. And I appreciate you coming on, Jim.
Okay. Well, thank you, April. I'm really glad to be here.
Are you?
I am. Yeah, I appreciate the invite. This is going to be an interesting little bit of time.
Yeah, an interesting recorded, proven period of time.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, no pressure.
No pressure.
No nerves. Nah, what are nerves? What's anxiety? I don't even know.
We're good. We are.
So I've asked you probably, I think it's been like five times now, I asked you to come on the podcast. And initially, I asked you because we would have, you know, similar to Shapiro and I, we would have really great conversations at work. And you provided amazing insight to my then, God, what, I was like, what, 30, 29, 30? In my career and in my life. So we would have, you know, very in-depth one-on-one conversations about things that were going on both in my personal life and in my professional life. And you provided a lot of, I don't want to say insight again because I just said it, but you helped a lot in a lot of different ways. So I asked you to come on. You're like, hell no, April, I'm not coming on your damn podcast. What's a podcast? I'm not going on there.
Hey, I know what a podcast is. That wasn't it. That's not why I didn't want to come on.
But, why didn't you want to come on before?
I just think that, I probably do a better job just one-on-one. And I was kind of worried about, you know, putting myself out there and, everything that entails. But, sure. You know, of course.
What does that entail, though, for you?
I don't know.
Judgment from other people or?
Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, you know, I think that we're sitting here and we're going to talk about, you know, over the next little bit, a lot of different topics.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, I want to be truthful about everything. But, you know, you say it, it's recorded, it's out there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, everybody's imperfect, right?
Right.
And so, you know, but if you ask me, I'm going to answer.
Sure.
And
and maybe back then you weren't ready for that level of exposure.
Probably not.
And truth.
Probably not.
Hashtag truth.
Hashtag truth. It's true.
So, yeah, I've asked you like a couple times over the years, and I had a last minute cancellation yesterday, and you were the first person that popped in my mind, and I was really hoping, fingers crossed, that you would say yes, and I'm glad that you did.
Yeah.
Because I'm very excited. I've actually haven't been this excited about a podcast in a long time.
Wow. Thank you, April.
Just because I don't, like, interviewing acquaintances and strangers is not fearful for me at all, but interviewing people who are literally in my circle, that's like, you know, next level. It's kind of like, you know, Joe Rogan doesn't have his mom on his podcast, you know, but he will invite strangers and have those very candid conversations with strangers. But you're someone who's been in my life pretty presently for the past like 3 years.
Yeah.
I feel like it's been longer, but maybe it's going on four. Next year will be four.
Yeah, I think we met like in March of 2018.
Right.
So three and a half years.
And you were my boss. Yeah. I mean, you were the what was your title?
Managing director.
Yep. Of the staffing firm that I worked at.
Yeah.
And then we just became friends after I no longer worked for that organization. And we've been in each other's lives ever since.
Yeah.
I've gone through some major transitions. Have you?
Yeah, I've gone through some pretty major transitions. Yeah.
Well, and when I came to work there, I was dating my ex-boyfriend. We both had children and we lived together. And since then, even since working for that organization, I moved into my own apartment, just me and Chloe. And then from there, you know, I met my now husband and now I have a house and all that stuff.
Yeah, you're a grown-up.
I'm a grown-up.
You're an official grown-up.
So great.
Yeah.
What is adulting?
Yeah. Yes, you've come a long way.
And I actually started my podcast back when I worked at MDI too.
You did?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Much to your chagrin.
Yeah. I figured we'd
Welcome.
Get there. Yeah. Chink. I was a little concerned about focus back then for you, and
which was fair, totally legit.
It was pretty legit.
It was legit.
Yeah, it was pretty legit.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, you're an extremely talented person, and I know that when you put your mind to anything, that you're going to accomplish it. And you know, even the conversations that we have now, you know, you still have that spark, you still have that drive, and you know, selfishly, when you worked with me, I wanted you to, you know, be all in with what you were doing and super focused on it. And
yeah.
I was worried about distraction.
And I was not super focused back then. I mean, we can be completely transparent. But I was coming from an organization where a lot of things were just handed to me back then before I came to work with you. And stepping into a smaller group, but a different industry, I did not put in the time and effort that I needed to be successful in that organization. But I learned that after I left, of course.
Well, sometimes it's the way it works.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, timing is often imperfect.
Yeah.
But, you know, as long as you get there, right? As long as you learn what you need to learn and you have the capability and the propensity to apply it, that's what really matters, right? I mean,
yeah.
That's probably the difference between being successful and maybe not having as much success as you desire. So...
What does success look like to you?
Happiness, you know. Success is just about happiness, whatever that entails, you know. I think that, being a person, happiness means different things to everybody, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, what success is for one person isn't going to be success to another.
Yeah.
But, you know, success for me is about, you know, happiness and, you know, giving and... you know, I've been very fortunate in my career and in my life.
Yeah.
I feel like I've been blessed with a lot. And, you know, I try to spend the time, you know, finding ways to give back and being impactful in people's lives. And
pay it forward?
Yeah. I mean, I had a lot of mentors pretty early on in my career, people that really took me under their wing and helped me. And, you know, when I asked them, you know, what I could do for them, right, you know, to repay them.
Yeah.
That's exactly what they told me. They just said, just go do it for somebody else.
Yeah.
And so that's, you know, that's...
Thank you. You've done it for me.
Well,
thank you.
You're
and
welcome.
You continue to do it for me. Thank you.
Well, you're welcome. No, I mean, you're a really great student, you know. You're somebody that I admire a lot, and I see a spark and a drive, and, you know, that you want to find people like that, right?
Yeah.
You want to find people that are going to pay attention, and you certainly do, so.
And pour into them.
Yeah.
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 So I've known you for 3 years now, and we've talked about a lot of stuff. I want you to tell a little bit more about you and your story and your background and where you came from, as much as you're comfortable with sharing.
Okay.
So we can start wherever you want.
I've lived in Plano most of my life. My family moved here back in the 70s. Both my dad and his brother were entrepreneurs. They started McDonald's franchising in North Texas. So that's why we moved here. So I grew up around entrepreneurs, and so that was always a big drive for me. I went to school at Texas Tech, and when I came back after that, I went to work for a bank, working in IT. And
what did you do back then in IT?
I did.
What was IT back then?
We had you know, just like it wasn't as rudimentary. You know, it wasn't the punch cards and all that. No, we actually had computers.
Know.
And yeah, never know. We had computers and spreadsheets and, you know,
crazy.
I mean, it was unbelievable. But but, you know, to your point, even though you're trying to be hilarious,
I am.
But it was, you know, at the beginning of all of it.
Yeah.
So I felt very fortunate to be kind of at the beginning of this technology revolution.
Yeah.
And so I was lucky to make a career out of it. You know, I got into a company, PageNet, which was a wireless company, pagers. before cell phones. And we did some really cool things with a really fantastic group of people that I worked with, you know, trying to get data out to wireless devices and sports scores and weather and tornado watches and stuff like that.
Oh, that's cool. To pagers?
Yeah.
Wow.
Two-way pagers. So we were, I mean, it sounds so ridiculous now when we think about where we are and,
But we had to get here from somewhere, right?
Yeah, we did. And so, you know, it was at the forefront. And, you know, I got to travel around the world and speak at conferences about upcoming wireless applications. And so that was really neat, especially, I went to Cairo, went to Jerusalem, Hong Kong, and just getting to talk about what was coming. So that was a really, it was great for my career.
Yeah.
Great stepping stone.
Great for travel too. You got to see like how other people live. Weren't you in like Tel Aviv or something when something crazy happened or the day before it happened or something?
Yeah. So, I was in Tel Aviv in 2001 and, was staying at a hotel right across the street from the Mediterranean. And, we were in a disco, two nights before it got bombed. I was already back in Dallas, but a friend of mine called me and said the disco we were in two nights ago just got bombed. And so, yeah, the timing of that was,
48
horrific.
Hours, man.
Yeah.
That's insane.
Yeah, it was horrific, but, fortunate.
And you got to go to Jerusalem. What was that like?
Magical, spiritual.
Amazing.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, it was one of the highlights of my life. Getting to see three different religions that really are, that's the center point. That's the geographical, base of their religion. It was interesting. You know, you saw these cultures that were coming together, and it was fairly peaceful that day, even though there were lots of guards and lots of AK-47s and stuff like that.
But
one of the best days of my life. I mean, I really getting to walk on the Via Della Rosa, going into the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, standing at the Wailing Wall.
Yeah.
I mean,
amazing.
My job allowed me to go and do that. So
that's cool.
Best of both worlds.
Right.
Yeah.
So since then, you've then moved into from like traveling and doing stuff like that. You've then moved into the industry that you're in now, which is the same industry that I'm in.
Yeah.
And now you get to put people to work in companies like that to do cool things.
Yeah. IT staffing sounds, I guess kind of boring. On the surface, right? What do you do? I work in IT staffing. Everybody's like, oh my God, what, yawn. But, it is really cool. I mean, I think, people come into the industry and, you try to teach them the value proposition and you teach them, how to be different. IT staffing's a commoditized business.
How many are there in DFW? Like 1,500 now, probably?
8 million. I mean, it's ridiculous how many companies.
1 billion.
It's ridiculous how many companies there are. But, it's also... you have to find your differentiation. You have to find, how you can be successful in a commoditized industry and field. And
how do you teach that, though? How do you teach people to differentiate themselves from others?
Well,
do you think you lead by example?
I hope so. I hope I do. But, the thing is that... it's understanding the value proposition about sales, right? And this goes across any industry, not just IT staffing.
Yep.
But, as a salesperson, you're there for the client. The client's not there for you.
Right.
And that's something that a lot of salespeople just don't understand.
Yeah.
They miss that. They walk in and they're like, I'm here. I've got all the solutions. Give me the opportunity and I'm going to solve all your problems. And that's not the way this thing works.
Yeah.
You're there to solve problems. But you've got to listen. You've got to understand what the challenges of the client are.
Yeah.
And
did you miss that one time when you went to Samsung?
I did. Yeah. Yeah, that's, man, April never forgets.
She doesn't.
Yeah, no, I walked into Samsung with a bunch of Apple products in my pocket and they kicked me out. You know, they're like, what are you doing here with your iPhone and your iPad? And
what is going on here?
Yeah, I mean, there's a perfect example of somebody who's been in an industry for 25 years that missed the boat, you know, that walked in and just didn't draw the correlation between here I am at a competitor of the company whose products that I use, and I'm bringing the products in. But I learned, I had a meeting about 2 months after that initial meeting.
Right.
And I showed up with, a Samsung Gear watch on.
Yep.
I didn't have the phone, but I had the Gear watch, and I, prominently displayed it and made sure that everybody
just
saw it.
Just so you guys know.
Yeah, right.
We're
right
here. Oh, what time is it?
That's
oh,
it.
Crazy.
That's it. So... I'm still learning,
I mean, that's life though, right? We're going to mess up all the time. We're going to fuck up all the time. And as long as we're learning from our fuck ups and not just continuing to fuck up, like that's the difference. That's the reason why you got that subsequent meeting is because you learned from your fuck up.
Listen to April saying all the bad words,
all
the bad words. No, I mean, that's right. I mean, it's a process. It's a process. And whether you've been doing it a week or you've been doing it for 25 years like I have been, you're still going to make mistakes.
What do you mean? You're not 35?
No, I'm not. But we still make mistakes, and it's what we do with those mistakes, how we learn from them, what we glean from them, and then how we grow from them, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's what makes life interesting, and that's what makes, even for somebody like me who's been around for a while, that's what makes the job still fun.
Yeah.
And then get to see, people fresh in their careers, get to grow, and that makes it so much fun too.
It is pretty fun.
It is.
I like it.
Yeah.
I'm here for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So your dad, you said that your family started McDonald's in North Texas.
Yeah.
So I want to talk a little bit about, just because you and I have talked about it too, I want to talk a little bit about the relationship you had with your dad and how your dad inspired you and was like a real example for you, and then like what that relationship was like, and then what it was like when you lost your dad, because you know that I recently lost my dad.
Yeah.
And I turned to you for some guidance, and I mean... I joke about it and I say, you're not even my real dad, Steve, but like, you're sort of like my professional dad, like, and my mentor dad, which is super cool because I can turn to you and ask you the questions that I would ask my dad if he were here.
Well, thank you, April. That's, that makes me feel really good and an enormous responsibility too.
Trying to hold it together. Keep it together.
Well, no, it's an enormous responsibility because of, what you're going to do in your life. And you have this greatness, this aura of greatness about you. And so because of that, I mean, it's an enormous responsibility. When you ask me, I want to make sure that, I'm speaking from the heart always and just hopefully giving you the kind of advice that you need. And, it's been exciting just to watch what you've done in the last 3 years. I mean, with this podcast, with your career and everything else, personally, with your relationship and everything, and sky's the limit. So
thank you.
I mean, I appreciate you saying that. So back to your question, my dad was an educator. He was a high school principal, had a master's degree in education. Before they got involved with McDonald's. And so he was always a teacher. He taught me to fish. He never fished for me.
Yeah.
He always was trying to teach me life lessons and, that I could take with me. And so when he wasn't with me, that, he was still with me. And, I'd make decisions based on, having a strong moral foundation. And which, sometimes I didn't do. I mean, to be
again,
perfectly
we all make
frank,
mistakes.
Right. Right. Sometimes, I didn't want to listen to the moral, barometer. So,
yeah.
But he was a great man, very inspirational, very well liked. He always had a hug for you, always wanted to spend the time talking to you. And so, he's been gone for 21 years, and It was really tragic.
How old were you when you died?
35.
Wow.
So yeah, just
very similar.
Yeah.
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 And right when you're like, as a man, you're hitting that, like, you know, you're hitting your strides, you're 35, you were married.
Not yet.
Not yet?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you were almost married.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you're like, you know, that's a huge transitional period in your life. And then you lose your dad.
Yeah, no, it's, you know, it's something that everybody deals with. I mean, you know, we all deal with loss.
Sure.
But, you know, it is, it's impactful. And I think that it causes you to, you know, take an assessment, you know, take an inventory of your life and what you're doing and the kind of person that you are. And, you know, how much did you glean, right? How much of what they told you or what they did, you know, that you learn from and then you apply. And, you know, I think that that's what we're here to do, right? We bump into people, we have these parents and friends and everybody that, and we're all here together and we're all trying to learn from each other. And,
All the time.
And when you lose somebody that is so instrumental to everything that you do.
Yeah.
And,
everything. He was your favorite parent.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hands down.
I mean, my dad, you know, we played golf together. We watched sports together. We did so much together. And you know, hopefully, even to this day, I mean, I pray that he rubbed off on me in a really big way, because that's just the kind of person he was.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
I know. Yeah. What do you think the biggest takeaway that you learned from your dad that you try to implement in your life?
You know, my dad always told me that to whom much has been given, much is expected, you know? You know, he told me that, you know, the talents that God gave me, that it was up to me to carry them forward and to put in the hard work you know, utilize those talents. And so, you know, whether it was, you know, playing basketball or, you know, talent that I have with computers or whatever else,
yeah,
that, you know, that it was up to me to really expound on it. And so, you know, that was the key for him,
yeah,
you know, that I worked hard. You know, I started at 14 years old working in the restaurants, our family's restaurants. And
yeah. Did you clean the toilets?
I cleaned the toilets.
Damn right.
I cleaned everything.
Thanks,
man. I mean, yeah. I mean, that's what happened, you know, when anybody came in and there was an accident in the bathroom or the lot needed to be cleaned, Junior got to do it.
Good job, Junior.
Yeah, and I'd go home and I'd be like, Dad, why is it always me? Why am I the one? And he's like, well, you know, it's our family, you know, it's our family's business.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you should take pride in it. And he was right. I should. So, you know, lessons like that. I mean,
yeah,
he was just, he had many, you know, many arrows in his quiver about how to live life and how to try to do it right. And again, I mean, I've done it far from perfect, you know,
yeah,
lots of foibles, but he was a good example of a good man.
Gave you a good vocabulary, I think.
Yeah, probably.
So, there's so many different ways that I could take that. I know that every time you talk about your dad, that it's in a great light, always. You tell me all the time, like every time I talk to you, you probably bring it up, you know, every conversation, just how great he was. So I think it's really important to not give credit, but like, it's really important to understand where somebody comes from, what their foundation is. And I can tell clearly that your foundation is your dad. A lot of it came from your dad. Did you play college basketball, or did you just play basketball in high school?
I played basketball in high school and was recruited in college and tried out at a couple of different universities. And
you got some ups, Jim O'Reilly?
Back in the day. Back in the day, yeah.
I asked him today how tall he was. He said 6'2" and a half.
Yeah, with boots.
He said I'm stuck.
With boots. Yeah, back in the day, I had jumps and I had hair. So, you know, those two things, they both have gone away since then.
We've seen how things have changed.
Yeah, they both have gone away since then. Right.
And you've been in Plano for most of your adult life, aside from traveling.
Yeah, no, we moved in 1979 to Plano when there were 40,000 people.
Wow.
And,
you guys have like one of your McDonald's locations was like a prime spot, right? Like, I don't know, what is it? Custer and something else. Did they say O'Reilly McDonald's or somewhere
some
on there?
Yeah. So, I mean, some of the cornerstones have got the name on it. And,
yeah.
And, you know, so, you know, when my dad passed away and my uncle retired, you know, they sold a lot of the McDonald's back to the company. And my cousin, Chuck, he has bought those back.
Oh, nice.
Over time. And so he's now the owner-operator.
Oh, okay.
In North Texas. And he's also got some stores out in East Texas around the Longview area.
Is that humble brag?
No, that's not. That's another cousin who lives in Kansas and operates McDonald's there.
But, oh, wow.
But, you know, so Chuck's done a really good job.
Runs in the blood.
It does,
it
yeah.
It does.
Yeah.
Mickey D's, baby.
That's
I'm
right.
I'm loving it.
That's right.
There you go.
That's right. The McRib. I mean, how can you beat it? But, you know, so you know, it's still in the family.
Sure,
and
that's great.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
Everybody's going to come find you after this, be like, where's my free Big Mac?
I'm sure they are, man.
Everybody.
Yeah.
All right, so, yeah, I just, after I lost my dad, it was really nice to talk to someone who had felt similar pain and not commiserate in the pain, but to really, like, to feel it, to grieve through it, and to move through it, you know, like, and to move forward. And it's like, it's still pretty fresh because my dad just died in May. You know, it's only November. And I mean, it's barely been 6 months. What is today? Yeah, in 4 days will be 6 months. So it's like, it's still so fresh. And like, the biggest thing for me is like with my kid, like, he was her pawpaw. He was her favorite. Like, that was her favorite grandparent. And I don't feel bad saying that, because sometimes we just have connections with people that, you know, are just stronger than others. And they were buddies. And so for me, it's like I get to now be the strong person for her, but allow her the grace to feel those feelings and to feel that grief. And it's like, how cool that I get to be there for her, feel that with her, but also help her heal through it too, which sucks. But without those extreme feelings, you know, we would have never had, without the sorrow, without the love, we would have never had the sorrow, right? Because if we didn't love him, then we wouldn't be as sad that he's gone. So like, how great that we got to feel that and have that and experience that. But now it's, you know, all sad.
Well, yeah, I mean, anytime that we lose somebody that's so important in our life and that we love, you know, to the depths that we can love a parent, right? A dad or a mom. And,
yeah. Like, you know, your dad never got to meet your kids.
Yeah. And that's
it sucks.
It does. That's life though, you know? I mean, it's just the way life goes. And, you know, you can lament and have sorrow, or, you know, it's what you focus on. It's what you really choose to, you know, to hone in on. And, you know, I've always just chose to hone in on, you know, the life lessons, and then be a living embodiment, if you will,
right,
of my dad. So even though he never got to meet my kids, my two daughters, you know, he definitely had an impact on them, with his life lessons and
right,
the things that he taught me. And so, you know, I mean, not to sound too corny, but his, philosophies and his perspective is coursing through me, you know, into them.
Right.
And so, you know, I get to talk to them about, you know, the same perspectives that he talked to me about. And, you know, I mean, unabashedly, steal, you know, the lessons that he taught me.
Yeah,
you know, I mean,
I've got
pretty much no originality when it comes to
carbon copy.
Right,
that's what I am.
Right. We, you know, when I try to talk to them about things, I mean, a lot of it just comes directly from him and you know, but you know, it's good. It's good. He was a wise man. He loved deeply.
Yeah.
And so hopefully that, you know, when I've talked to them about their life and their perspective, that's what they get from it.
And that's carried through. Like, you love deeply too, which I like. I like that piece about you, because you changed my perspective on the way a dad can love his kids and be present for his kids. Cause that was the big thing. A big takeaway for me was, you know, when I worked for you and it was like, okay guys, I gotta go. I gotta take my kid to play practice, or I gotta take my kid here. I gotta pick my kid up from school, or I dropped my kid off from school this morning, you know? And it was like, I mean, are you a boomer? Is that your generation?
Yeah, I guess.
I don't know. Are you a boomer?
I don't know.
I don't think so. Cause my parents aren't boomers. Their parents are boomers. So I don't know what you are. I'll have to look it up.
Yeah. Look it up.
But the perspective from your generation is not as fathers weren't as present, right? But you didn't really have a choice. But also you had a great dad to give you that foundation so that when you did have kids, you were like, I'm going to take them to school. I'm going to take them to play practice. I'm going to be present because it's the most important thing for me to mold their lives and to be present in their lives. And that really gave me not hope, but it gave me a good model to see, because now that I am with Matt, my husband, it's like, I know that that isn't out of the question. I know that I don't have to carry that burden or that load by myself when it comes to child rearing. Like, I know that there's someone out there that would be willing to put in just as much work as I am. And I hate to call it 50-50, because some days it won't be 50-50. Some days it'll be 80-20 and vice versa, you know? But to see that in a dad was inspiring. And then there was other things too, that just really fun, quirky things that you did with your kids. You know, like you guys had really, a really good relationship, so much that it was almost like, cause like you're a salesman, right? You're in sales and you have this persona that you put on when you go to work. Not that you're not the same person at home, but you know, everybody has to put on a little bit of a front or a face or present themselves in a certain way at work. But then it's like when you're at home with your kids, your dad, you know, you don't have to be the salesperson when you're with your kids, which is so cool, because you could tell that you had the ability to model that for them. Like when you're out in public and you're talking to people and you make sure they make eye contact and you say nice to meet you and you shake their hand, you do all those things. And that inspired me to instill that into Chloe too. Not fully solely from you, but I also got that reiteration from you too, which was cool because I saw the way your kids acted and they were very upstanding and they were very polite and they always talked to me and my daughter, which now then in like made sure that Chloe is that way too. So I thought that was cool.
Well, that's nice of you to say on a lot of different levels. And you know, it just goes back to teaching them to fish, right?
Yes.
Teaching them to be the kinds of people that you know, can make a small impact or a big impact, you know, on the world, their surroundings, the people that are in their periphery. And you know, that was kind of always the goal and objective, you know, for them, is teaching them how to do that. And and so, you know, hopefully in some small way, you know, that was imparted on them. And I appreciate that you acknowledged that you saw it back in the day.
Yeah, man.
Makes me feel good. So,
yeah. I mean, Chloe and I went to, what, 2 or 3 of your daughter's plays?
Yeah.
And loved it every time. And Chloe, oh my gosh, my daughter thinks she's a method actor. It's ridiculous. But also hilarious at the same time.
Yeah.
She's so funny.
That's hilarious.
I know. I can't with her.
Yeah.
The other day, for Halloween, we're sitting there, and I'd already done her hair and makeup, and she was going to be Wonder Woman. So we're sitting at the counter, and I'm like, you got to eat your dinner before we go trick-or-treating, because you're about to eat some candy, and you're not going to feel good if you just eat candy for dinner. And she's sitting there, and she's, like, talking with an accent. She's got a little plastic wine glass from her birthday party, and she's holding it, and she takes a sip, and she's like, come to mama. And I was like, Lord have mercy. And then she takes a sip, and she goes,
that's great.
I can't believe I just ate my husband.
Oh my gosh.
And I was like, what did you just say? Like, I know.
What's going on over there, April?
I can't make this stuff up. I can't make it up. I don't even drink wine. Where did she even get that from? I don't know.
It's hilarious.
She's so funny.
Yeah.
She's like an old lady in a 7-year-old's body. It's awesome. So I want to talk about some major mistakes in your life and what you've learned from them. And you don't have to say what they are, but I want to talk about, like, when you hit rock bottom or when you're pretty low and what you do to get out of it.
Yeah. So, you know, I think that everybody walking around alive today has got ebbs and flows in their life, right? There's there's peaks and valleys always for everybody. You know, some people's peaks are higher, some people's valleys are lower, but everybody has them. And you know, yeah, I mean, I've made plenty of mistakes, and you know, personally, you know, things that I've done, actions that I've taken, things that I've said, decisions that I've made. You know, a lot of it I wish I had to do over again. You know, I really do. But, you know, you don't. You don't get that chance. You just have to learn from it and move forward.
Right.
And, but, you know, the things that I've learned, you know, over the last couple years is, you know, not to really try to control things, you know? I mean, you know, when it's true, I mean, you know.
I'm laughing because of the last conversation we had, and you're like, why are you stressing?
Yeah.
We got no control.
Well, yeah.
It's going to happen.
Yeah.
It's just going to happen.
Yeah. I mean, that's really what it is. You know, you bounce along in this life, and you know, when good things happen, you know, you wear your arm out trying to pat yourself on the back and, you know, talk about, oh, what a great job I've done. Or, you know, you give yourself way too much credit. And then when bad things happen in your life, you know, you go, oh, God, why are you doing this to me? You know, God, why are you, you know, what have I done? And, you know, so good things, it's you, and the bad things, it's God. And right. It's really just the opposite. I mean, it's one of the great ironies of life is that the good things that happen in your life are because of God and really the capability for you to let go a little bit and, you know, try to understand how you can do God's will every day and not your will. And I think that when, you know, people can get there or get there as much as they can, I mean, again, imperfection, right? But,
sure.
But if you can really get to that point, you know, I really think that there are, you know, the magic happens, right? Miracles happen in your life. You know, there's beauty, there's kindness, there's, you know, an understanding, if you will. Not complete understanding, but, you know, you have a little bit better perspective of what you're supposed to be doing in your life. And then, you know, I mean, you know, I believe that God wants for me to really try to help people and to be there for them and to help them grow. And as long as I'm staying focused on that, I've got a pretty good chance of, you know, having a really good day.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, the flip side of that is that when the bad stuff happens in my life, it's usually because of the things that I've done, you know, that I've tried to have too much control, that I've, you know, I'm in self-will and self-will run riot, if you will. And you know, I think that that's something that happens with a lot of people.
Yeah.
And, you know, for me, I've really tried to, you know, be aware and acknowledge that when I start to creep into that, when I'm in a situation, I start to creep into, you know, self-will, that I have the ability to stop and pause and rethink it. And, you know, that's helped me a lot. It's helped me a lot over the last couple of years, helped me, you know, kind of reset my life, if you will. So,
yeah,
you know.
Well, and you've had some very prosperous times. You've had some less than prosperous times.
Yeah.
So from, and even just from like a, you know, not even a, and maybe both, right? A personal and a professional perspective. Like when you start to creep into that self-will place, you know, do you remember, like looking back, hindsight's always 20/20, right? Like looking back on those times, do you think that you maybe ignored your intuition and you just kept pushing forward because you thought that it was the right thing to do? Or you were just like so caught up in the moment or in the situation or in the position that you were just like, no, everything's going to be fine. Like, this is fine. I'm making all this money. This is fine. You know, like, and then bam, you're like, oh, it's not fine.
Well, yeah. You know, so, ego, right?
Right.
I mean, ego, is,
powerful.
I've got a friend that always tells me, he tells me all the time that my ego is not my amigo. And it's really not, you know, ego is, it's a sentiment, it's a feeling, it's, being more important. A lot of times your ego will make you feel more important than you really are,
yeah.
You know? You have this aggrandized view of yourself, and you know, that's detrimental. It's detrimental to you being the kind of person that you need to be, and staying grounded and focused. And, you know, so, you know, yeah, there have been times when I've had great jobs and got to do a lot of really, really cool things.
Yeah.
And looking back on it, I realized that my ego was out of hand and I was running amok and, you know, not really, you know, very grounded. And focused on doing the right thing, right? Just being true to myself and true to the people around me.
And you taught me some pretty good lessons about that too. And like, I think that my current CEO told me this the other day. He said, I forget that you're such a young professional because I'm 34, but I've only been in this business and also in corporate America since I was 28. So 6 years, you know? Which, not that I've only been working for 6 years, but corporate America is a different beast than like bartending, right? Like there's still politics of bartending, but nothing like what it is in corporate America. So, but I've learned some things that you've taught me too, like, you know, how is it that I am helping people, and like even in instances and opportunities or circumstances with you, in situations with you, I, you know, let my ego take over. And I know you know exactly what I'm talking about right now, but and you had to kind of like check me and say, hey man, you're looking at this the wrong way. Like that's absolutely not the way you need to be looking at it. And it's crazy how after that situation, it was like that was such an impactful event that it was ingrained. Like I will never forget that day and that thing that happened and how that's shaped my career from that moment. Which is nuts because it's like the more I can serve, the more successful I am in return. But it's not until I've done what I need to do to serve others that I then have success.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I talk about this all the time with the people that, you know, I'm fortunate enough to work around. And, you know, you got to come every day. And you got to understand what your focus needs to be. And you know, you're there to serve, right? Company's paying you money, right? They're paying you money for your time.
Right.
And hopefully because of your skill set and because you're a professional and what you can provide for them, which ultimately is return on their investment, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, you're there to serve. And so, you know, who do you serve, right? And when we talk about, you know, being an IT staffing professional, right, for whatever that means, you know, you're serving your clients, right? You're there for your clients, and then you're there for, you know, your contractors, right? The people that go to work on behalf of your company every day at a client and do the work, right? And then you're there for each other, right? You know, you've got to build a culture of, you know, that's fun and where people, you know, feel comfortable, you know, expressing themselves and talking about everything, you know, the successes, the fears, all of it. You know, IT staffing is a pretty hard job, you know, for the things we talked about earlier, commoditized and lots of nuances, and you're dealing with people, and people are, you know, unpredictable. And so, you know, you got to think on your feet. You got to be ready for pretty much anything. But if you come to work every day and you understand, you know, who it is that, you know, you're there to serve, you know, your clients, your contractors, and then each other, you've got a chance to be successful. But you can't just say it. You have to do it.
Right.
You know, you can't just, you know, it can't just be some words on a wall or some words in a mission statement. I mean, you got to really live it.
Yeah.
And, you know, that takes a lot of heavy lifting. I mean, that takes, you know, commitment
personal
from people.
Personal heavy lifting,
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah.
Ego lifting.
Well, yeah, I mean, it, you know, I mean, you've heard me say it 100 times. I mean, some days you're the bug and some days you're the windshield.
Yeah.
And, you know, when
the
you're...
The windshield days suck.
Well, the windshield days, actually, when you're the windshield and you get to smash the bug, that's good. But when you're the bug and you're getting smashed, that's not so good. But you know, you know, you understand that, you know. Again, it's the ebbs and flows. It's the highs and lows, peaks and valleys.
Yeah.
And that's part of life. And so what are you going to do, you know? When the chips are down and you're not having such a good day, you know, what are you going to do? Yeah. Are you going to just push through it and continue and understand who you're trying to serve and focus on that, or, you know, or
just
not
quit and
or
say,
not
fuck it.
Right.
Yeah.
You know,
go clean the toilets at McDonald's.
Right.
Yeah.
You don't want to do that. Trust me.
Sometimes
it's nasty. It's nasty, but yeah, that's exactly it.
So what do you think that your experience has taught you about, like gauging personalities or like when you meet people or when you go to hire somebody or whatever, like, what do you think all of your experience has shown you?
That, you know, it's all a crapshoot, you know? I think that you have experience, right? You've been doing something for a long time. And so you hope that, you know, that you've gained knowledge or that you, you know, have insight or intuition, right? You use the word intuition. And you know, no matter what, I think that sometimes somebody that you think doesn't have a shot being successful
comes in and blows it out of the water.
Yeah, blows you away, right?
Yeah.
It's just got a certain element or, you know, understanding or personality that resonates in a way that you might not even have seen. And then, you know, they're a rock star, right? And then somebody that you think is just like, you know, got this and understands it and, you know, is going to be great in front of a client and, you know, prepared.
Flat on their face.
Yeah, they just, you know, for whatever reason.
Shows up drunk.
Whatever. I mean, yeah.
And
again, it's about people, right? People are unpredictable.
For sure.
And so, you know, I think that's the reality of it. You know, you just don't know. And, you know, you have to be ready for everything all the time.
Yeah.
And then it goes back to pausing, right? If
the pause is so effective.
The pause works. The pause works. I mean, if all you're trying to do is just react to everything that comes at you all the time, you're going to be exhausted.
Yeah.
And you're going to be wrong.
The adrenaline accompanying that. No, thank you.
Yeah, and then the decisions you make are going to be wrong, too, a lot of times, because you're just in a hurry to react.
In reaction mode.
Right.
Yeah.
So the pause is key, right? Let it kind of wash over you a little bit. Let it...
The pause leads to proactivity.
Yeah, and for me, it leads to prayer, right? I mean, I stop, pause, and pray, you know?
What's your prayer like?
My prayer is very simple, you know? I think I've learned over time what really works for me personally, and that's just to try to do God's will every day.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, my prayer is, God, please let me do your will. Please put me in situations that you know, where I can be of benefit to you.
Yeah.
And help people or whatever it is that you want from me.
Are you formal about praying? Do you like close your eyes and crush your hands and get on your knees?
No, I'd usually do it laying in bed with my head on a pillow in the morning and throughout the day, you know, if I come across a situation or I'm uncertain about something, you know, I'll pray then. But again, it's just a very casual talk with God. And then at the end of the day, just, you know, doing the reconciliation, right? Just asking, you know.
Wrap it up.
Did I do it?
Right.
Did I do it, man? Did I make you happy? And when I had an opportunity, you know, did I
do the right thing?
Yeah, did I live up to it? So that's really it. It's pretty simple.
It's crazy. I've been having sort of like a, not an epiphany, but I would say my stepmom told me whenever my dad was really sick, she was like, he always pushed for Christianity in our house. And she's a very much like a Stevie Nicks, like hippie chick, like earth and whatever and universe and all that stuff. Not that she doesn't believe in God, but she's just like, you know, all connected through all things. And my dad was very steadfast and he was like, nope, God, we're Christians. This is how we do it. America.
Right.
And it's funny, since my dad died, I've sort of been having like, I think my relationship with Jesus or God or whatever that is, I've been feeling it a lot more, but my relationship is similar. It's just very informal. It's like talking, and mostly talking when I'm driving. And I'm like, and it's funny that you say that I'm just here to do your will, because I think that's where I got it from. It's from you, because I was having a conversation with someone not that long ago. And I was like, you know, I've just been kind of showing up every day like, hey, man, I'm just here to do whatever you want me to do. Just do it through me. Like, I'm here. I'm a vessel. Just do it. And that's worked for me, because I think when you put the restraints and the like boundaries and limitations and the formality on a relationship like that, a spiritual relationship, then you kind of like put yourself in a box. And then if you don't do it exactly like the box looks, then you're doing it wrong, you know? And I don't want it to be that way. I want it to be like, you know, I want to pick and choose. I want to be a cafeteria Christian. I want to do it the way I want to do it. But I think that if it's organic like that, then it doesn't seem like work. It just seems like natural. Like it's just a second nature, right? So it's like, it's weird that it's been happening that way, but I've been welcoming it. And I've been having those situations where I'm like, okay, present, not like a challenge, but more of like, I need you in this situation, present yourself to me, present the right option, or guide me into choosing the right thing to do. Or if I want to make this decision, I know it's a bad decision, why shouldn't I make that decision? Or you know what I mean? Like, and it's been refreshing and a big change for me, because I went so long without practicing a religion, but I don't necessarily see it as practicing a religion. I just kind of feel the way you said is like, I'm just here to do whatever it is you need me to do today and do the right thing in most of my situations, you know, like,
yeah,
it doesn't seem forced.
Yeah. So, you know, I think that we get caught up as people, and again, I mean, I hate using the royal we, so I'll just talk about me. I get caught up in, you know, what's expected, right? And, you know, religion has always been like that for me. You know, what's expected, and who's making the expectations.
Were you Catholic? Did you grow up Catholic?
I did. And, you know, so who's making the expectations, right? Who's making the rules? And, you know, I'm not that great of a rule follower. And,
oh, really?
Yeah, right. And so, you know, it was very uncomfortable for me and very confusing. And so, you know, for me to get close to God and to have the kind of relationship that I need to have.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, ultimately that hopefully he wants from me,
right.
You know, is that, I mean, just, it's very simple.
Yeah.
It's just a simplistic method and relationship and attitude. And, you know, everybody used to talk about having a personal relationship, right? And then everything that entailed. But, you know, I just talk to God like he's a friend of mine.
Right.
You know? And that's been very helpful. It's been very simple. I keep using that word, but simple, and provides a lot of clarity.
Yeah, it's not complicated. It's not convoluted. Yeah, it doesn't have to be more than it has to be. You know what I mean?
It's like, not.
I think that's the pomp and circumstance of going to mass, or the pomp and circumstance of going to, you know, church, or, you know, Wednesday nights, or whatever the case may be. You don't necessarily even have to go anywhere. Now, I understand that the structure and the community side of doing those things, but I also think that if you don't have that personal relationship outside of those things, then are you doing those things for the right reasons?
Yeah, and you know what? It's immaterial.
It
ultimately is immaterial.
Tim O'Reilly just cutting right through it.
It's just,
that's what,
you know,
you're good for. That's why you're here.
It really is. It's immaterial, and people need to do whatever they want to do,
right,
and have the relationship that they want to have,
yeah,
in the way that they want to have
and
it.
And it's like, you know, like, honestly, it's your business.
If it is,
and your relationship is your business. Like, if your relationship with God is your business, but you inspired me and kind of planted that seed in me to where that's honestly, genuinely how I feel now, which is strange because I've been very vocal about not having a religion or not being religious and just being open to all circumstances or all opportunities or whatever, or calling myself spiritual or whatever, you know, but it was very much like, and it wasn't like a catastrophic event or something, you know. It was just after my dad died, my vision was very clear, and it was like my perspective just completely changed on what's important, what matters, like, am I doing the right thing in all areas of my life? And then I just kind of kept feeling this like nudge or this tug, and you know, maybe that's part of, because I don't necessarily negate that the spiritual realm is there or not either, right? Because who knows? We don't know. I'm not dead. You're not dead. We don't know. We're still living and we're still alive. And it could be my dad, like, trying to get me or point me in that direction too. Just be like, you know, hey, like, I've been here for so long. I wanted you to be here too. And this is my way of showing you or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
It's just been some crazy things that have happened lately that are more than just, what is that called? What's that word? More than just, coincidence. It's been like, purposeful, and it's cool.
Yeah. You know, I think to your point, when right after my dad passed, I started working as a consultant and getting on a plane every Monday morning and traveling somewhere, you know, in the country and coming back on Thursday nights. And I remember Monday, I was always like, you know, I felt lonely, right? I mean, I had to get up early and drive to the airport, and then I'd get on the, you know, the parking tram, and they'd take me to the terminal, and usually at 4:30 in the morning, it was me and maybe another person, but a lot of times it was just me on this tram. And I, you know, I felt lonely. You know, oh gosh, I'm going to be away from the people I love for the next 3 or 4 days.
Yeah.
And that's when I felt my dad the most. Every week I'd get on that tram and I just felt him close to me. I felt a presence and just this, you know, providing solace to me that, you know, it's going to be okay. And you know, I've always known there's a spiritual realm, right?
Right.
But when... You know, during those times, I mean, I really felt like, wow, you know, this is purposeful, meaningful. You know, I need to acknowledge it. I need to, you know, I need to appreciate it, right? That even though he's gone, you know, physically, that he's still here spiritually and still lives inside me. And
that's the hardest part.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's
it's tough.
Yeah. Well, but, you know, I don't mean to sound cavalier about this, but none of us get out of here alive. You know, we just don't. And
people die every day.
Every day. and it's just hard with people that, you know, we love and that we care about. And, you know, but it's got to be about the celebration. It's got to be about...
Oh, for sure.
It's got to be about, you know, letting you know, their perspective and love... work through you. And
that's what I told Chloe the other day too. We were driving home from school, and she was like, she was just so sad and she was just crying so much. And I was like, how cool that we miss him so much. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
But it's like, how cool that we had such a good relationship with him that we're this sad that he's gone. And with like, if we didn't have that, that would, you know, it would be really sad if we were apathetic to his death. And I try to use words like that with her so I can teach her what they mean.
Yeah.
But she was like, you're right, Mom. And I was like, you know, there are other family members that we have that we're not as close to. And, you know, we don't really feel one way or the other. But the fact that we are this sad about missing his presence says how impactful it was.
Yeah.
And I said, and that's, I read something the other day and it was like, the pain and the grief from missing someone is that way of keeping them alive, like keeping their story in your life. And that's what I told her. I was like, every time we cry about him, it's like, that's our way of telling funny stories or telling, you know, doing the things that we remember him doing. And I know that my brother is struggling a lot more than we are.
Yeah.
But.
Well, you know,
it sucks, but it's real. Like, it's so real.
Yeah.
It's the worst club to be in ever, but.
but you know, we're all in it. You know, we're all in that club, and it's what we do with our memories and our emotions and, you know, how we move forward.
Yeah,
and that's really what counts. And then you know what would they want? You know,
I know.
Mean, you know, you start lamenting about, you know, the loss, And, you know, they want you to move forward. They want you to be happy.
Yeah.
You know, they love you. And, you know, it's good to acknowledge the impact that anybody has had in your life, but especially somebody that like your dad but, you know, ultimately they want you to be happy. They want you to take the lessons
your dad. I mean,
yeah. But, you know, take the lessons that they taught you and apply it and then go you know, have a fruitful and happy life.
Yeah.
You know, that's really, really the goal and the objective, right?
So I want to wrap up this podcast with one more topic.
Okay.
I want you to talk about your journey with becoming sober.
Yeah. Yeah. So I've been sober now for about 18 months.
Congratulations.
Thanks.
Welcome.
Next month will be my 18th month. You know, I was, sick. I've had a blood condition most of my life.
Yeah. What is that? What's it called?
Protein S deficiency, which causes clotting. So, you know, at 21, I have pulmonary embolism. 25, I had a stroke. I've had heart attacks.
And so your blood doesn't clot or
it clots too much.
Got it. Yeah. So you are on blood thinners.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, something I've dealt with for most of my life. And, about 6 years ago, I had surgery on my right leg because I had a clot and had a hard time walking. They thought they were going to have to amputate, and they didn't. And then 2 years ago, I had surgery on my left leg, and turns out that, you know, I had a clogged aortic valve, and so I wasn't getting blood flow to my legs. And,
yeah.
You know, I still was told that they were probably going to have to amputate. And, you know, I came out of those surgeries, you know, with a prescription from my doctor for painkillers and oxycodone, hydrocodone. And, you know, in a short amount of time, I probably was pretty severely addicted to it, you know. And
it's hard not to be. Those drugs are so powerful.
They are. And, you know, the relief that they provide and the escape that they provide from, you know, chronic pain, right? I mean, you just start relying on it.
So with your legs and stuff, the clotting, was it painful? It hurts?
Yeah, it hurts, and they're still there. I mean,
is there certain food you're not supposed to eat because it clots your blood or something?
There's certain food you're not supposed to eat because it can thin your blood.
Oh.
So, like, vitamin K is a blood thinner, right? And so, you know, if you're taking blood thinner, well,
you're not supposed to have vitamin K if you're taking blood thinners.
And that's not even, you know, apropos anymore because, like, the blood thinners today are happening on a molecular level. You know, the old warfarin or Coumadin, you know, really had an effect on the things that you ate, or the things that you ate had an effect on the efficacy of the drug. And and that's not really the case anymore.
Okay.
But I mean, so, you know, the painkillers and drinking, you know, to try to...
Great combination.
Yeah.
Always successful.
That definitely makes the rocking world go round.
Make you feel like Bob Marley, feel no pain.
Well, something. But you know, I finally realized that I needed to get off the painkillers, and I did over like a 4-day weekend.
I bet that was fun.
It was not fun.
Fun little detox?
Not fun. Just locking myself in my home office, basically, and getting through that. And then a short time after that, you know, I realized that alcohol really wasn't,
helping.
You know, helping.
Yeah.
It wasn't making me feel less pain. It was making me feel more pain.
Yeah.
And on top of that, you know, doing all the stupid things that come with, you know, using alcohol, you know, for any other reason than just maybe having a social drink or two.
Sure.
And so, you know, I decided to stop drinking and, you know, made some decisions in my life to participate in certain things that gave me the information and the support that I needed not to do that.
Yeah.
And, you know, allowed me to be around a group of people that were dedicated to you know, helping people be sober.
Sure.
And be supportive. And
number one rule of Fight Club, we don't talk about Fight Club.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, it, you know, it's really changed my life. And, you know, I think for the first time since, you know, I was probably 18, 19, 20 years old and started drinking then, you know, socially. And
college.
I would air quote, you know, socially if I could. But, you know, I think that for the first time, you know, staying sober for 18 months and then putting God in the middle of everything I do, that I feel more like the person that I'm supposed to be.
Yeah.
For the first time maybe
ever
in that 40 years.
Yeah.
So it's been wonderful. It's you know, the thing for me about sobriety is that it provides me so much freedom. You know, I have freedom in not drinking. I have freedom in waking up every day and remembering.
Not hungover.
Yeah, remembering everything that I did
if
and
I was an asshole,
said.
I was a sober asshole.
Right. Well, you know, that's funny that you say that because, you know, I've got a friend that, you know, he's been very instrumental in my life. He's been like a second father to me, and that's his favorite term. He said, "You didn't become sober to become a sober asshole," you know? And so it's about the spirituality and about, you know, being sober, but being a good kind of sober.
Yeah.
And,
you're not a bitter sober.
Yeah, not
right.
at all.
Right.
Not at all. And, but, you know, some people are.
Right.
Some people, they're angry that they can't do the things that they used
right.
to do.
Right. And then some people don't have the same perspective, right? They don't think that there's, they don't feel the liberation of being sober. They feel like it's a constraint.
Yeah, and you know, it's just absolutely not for me. I mean, again, you know, I think the one thing that I've learned about sobriety is not talking about sobriety or the way you get sober or the perspective that you have collectively, you know. You know, talking about how we do things. Well, it's not about how we do things. It's about how I do it. And, you know, I do things a certain way that hopefully work for me and provide benefit for me.
Yeah.
And clarity. Serenity, right? Serenity for me. And so, you know, not drinking, you know, always being, you know, aware and in control of my faculties
yep.
and my emotions to a good degree. I mean, not perfect, but, you know,
kind of like how you responded the other day when I told you I'm trying to get pregnant.
yeah, that I.
Why?
Yeah, probably not my best moment. Probably not my best moment.
That might have been my favorite, though.
Yeah.
Because it was so genuine. It was so honest. It's so real.
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah.
And I was like, and you know what I did there? Implemented the pause.
Yeah.
I didn't say shit.
No, you didn't. You didn't, which I was really proud of you. I didn't react the way that I should have, and you didn't re-react or, you know, based on what I said. So that's growth, April.
I know.
I mean, we're growing.
Look at us.
Look at us.
Look at us.
We're
amazing.
Growing. Yeah, we are.
It's funny because I ask you about sobriety because that was a choice for you. Like, you needed to make the decision to do that, right? Like, you had the realization in your life that you needed to do it. And mine kind of came from not really a... I don't know what it came from. It kind of came from like just the realization that I just don't have time to be hungover. Like, and it wasn't like any event. I didn't get a DWI. I didn't, you know, and all of that stuff. And you know, because we worked together. We went to work happy hours together where I drank Topo Chico or I drank water or I drank whatever or I drank Diet Coke or whatever. And you know, because you probably get the questions now too. Well, you're not going to have a drink or you're not going to do that. And I'm like, no. and it is liberating because I don't have to worry about if I'm going to be able to drive home, if I'm going to be able to go somewhere. Do I have obligations on my calendar tomorrow that I'm not going to be able to meet because I'm going to have a hangover? I'm going to feel like shit or whatever. And it just kind of became a progression that I made and choices that I made going forward that, number one, I don't need substances to deal with my life because I'm actually enjoying my life. Number two, like I don't have time for the delay that alcohol causes ever. And it's so expensive. Like, I mean, just looking at it as from a money perspective too, like when you go to a bar, alcohol is marked up by 300%. So even if I did want to drink, I would save the money and drink at home. But then I'm like, what? You're drinking at home alone? You're miserable? Like, what's wrong with you?
Yeah.
And I just don't need it. And that's the cool, I guess, realization that I've had is just the last time I got drunk was at my birthday party last year in 2020.
Yeah, I remember.
And that was, I know. And that's why I said that. But that was, you know, that was the last time. And like the last time that I drank in excess, and I just don't know, outside of like celebrations and, you know, really large occasions or something like that, Matt and I, neither of us really drink or do anything else. We just kind of, you know, live.
Well, that's great. That's awesome. It's amazing. I mean, it's kind of, I don't know. I mean, for me, that's the way it should be, right? I mean, I don't know why I spent so much time in my life trying to hide the way I feel, trying to change the way I feel, trying to cloud it.
Or who you are.
Yeah. I mean, what did alcohol ever do for me positive? Absolutely nothing. I mean, it just didn't. And you know, when I have an opportunity to talk to young people, you know, that are maybe dealing with, you know, addiction in some way, you know, that's really it. You know, what has any substance really ever done for you? You know, what kind of
dull your senses?
Yeah, what benefit, what positive do you get out of it?
Right.
You know, I mean, and ultimately it doesn't. I mean, initially, you know, it doesn't make you feel good. Does it change the way you feel? Yeah. But in a very short, you know, shrift, a very, very short amount of time, it's detrimental and impactful.
Right.
And I've never seen it do anything, you know, beneficial for anybody. So that's got to be the message, right?
Right.
And yet, you know,
what's the value add?
Well, like, there's not, but
none.
You know, society and the way we've been conditioned is that, you know, if we want to have a good time, it's wrapped around, you know, some sort of alcoholic beverage, right?
Right.
I mean, you go to a game, you have a beer, you go to a bar, you have, you know, whatever.
A cocktail.
Yeah, whatever.
You go to dinner, you have wine.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, there's just this association and you know.
And it's everywhere. It's rampant.
Yeah. And
then we're like, but don't drink and drive.
Yeah, exactly. You know, there's this dichotomy that just doesn't really.
Blows my mind.
It doesn't make sense. But I bought into it. I bought into it completely. And again, I mean, you know, for the first part of drinking, you know, at a bar or whatever, during a time, I liked the way it made me feel. But
well, who doesn't like? Everybody likes the initial high,
but
right?
But then you know, it's the stopping and you know, and then the recovery the next day. You know, you know when you're younger, it doesn't take long, but when you start to get older, it takes longer.
It's like 7 days for me right now.
It takes a long time, and so there's just, you know, for me, there's just no value in it.
No.
I just don't see it. I you know, you talk about the money economically. It's
yeah, how
a
much
lot.
Money are you saving now?
I'm saving a boatload. A boatload. I am. So you know, but you have to come to the realization, right?
Yeah.
I had to come to that realization. I had to understand how impactful it was on my health, in particularly, right? Alcohol and me have never mixed with this deficiency that I have.
Right.
I drink alcohol, I get dehydrated. I've already got a blood condition. The dehydration makes me throw
clotting,
out clots.
Right? Yeah, worse. Yeah.
Right. And, you know, I was pretty stubborn. You know, you talked about stubborn earlier and, you know, my doctor would tell me, you can't do this. You know, you should be stopping. You should not be doing it. And I'm like, I'm bulletproof. I'm young. I'm going
to
do whatever I want. Right.
To me.
Nothing. And yet it just kept.
I'm infallible.
Right, right. It just, exactly. And it just kept happening. And I've been sufficiently scared now. And I realize I'm not getting any younger.
How's your health markers now? What does your doctor say now? Well, you've lost like what, 30 pounds, 40 pounds?
60.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was just a guess.
Yeah, I've lost a lot. You know, of course, just not drinking, right? And watching my diet and stuff like that.
Sure.
And you know, being very careful about what I eat.
Well, I mean, drinking is literally just like empty calories.
Yeah, empty calories. It's really bad.
And you don't feel rejuvenated or motivated after you get drunk. Like, that, I want to do nothing.
None of it. None of it. But you know, the doctor said to me that, you know, I didn't have very long to live, or that they were going to have to amputate my legs, and I quit drinking, and I started watching my diet and my weight, and you know, I walked back in for a 6-month checkup, and he was just like, you know, he's like, you've done all the heavy lifting, you've done what you've needed to do to, you know, change the way you're living and change your health, and you know, so his prognosis changed, and it's fairly positive, and
good.
you know, yeah, I mean, I want to be here as long as I can.
Right.
Right. I've got a lot of stuff left.
I need you to stick
do.
Around, Steve.
Well, okay. Thank you.
I need you to sub in.
April K. Thank you. But I've got a lot of things that, you know, I want to do, and I've got a lot of things I still want to see. And
yeah,
I want
to
see
a lot of people to mentor.
I want to see people, be all that they can be, like you.
Yeah.
And, I'm excited to see about where you're going to take everything, all the talents that God gave you, and what you're going to do with it. I think the sky's the limit for you, so I want to be here for that.
Well, thank you for breaking your personal barriers and coming on to my podcast.
Sure.
Because I know that 3 years ago, you were vehemently opposed, and now you're a new man.
Well, no, I hope that people that are listening to this, that, you know, they find some value in it. But, you know, I think that I kind of question, you know, what do I have to say to anybody about anything?
Yeah, but that's your imposter syndrome creeping in on you. You have a lot of value.
Well, I hope so.
You provide a lot of value to a lot of people. I hope Kylan Murphy listens to this episode. I think he listens to my podcast.
Yeah.
He'll like that shout out too.
Yeah.
You're welcome, Kylan.
Yeah, he will like that shout out.
I mean, genuinely though, I give you shit all the time naturally, but you have made, and I think that it's, as a woman, it's easy for women to want women mentors, but I think that some of the most impactful mentors I've had in my life have been men. So, and I think that it is less about the sex and more about the energy of the person that is mentoring you and the person that is in your circle. And you have been an imperative person in my circle, and you are the one of the very few people that I will call to get advice from. I always go to you because I trust your advice, even when it was laced with alcohol. I still trust your advice, but more so now. And I think that I know that it's a little bit of a role reversal, but I'm so proud of the progress that you've made. I mean, you're basically like a new person. You're a new version of Jim that I didn't know before. And I think that had you come on my podcast 3 years ago, you wouldn't have had the perspective that you have now. So I think that everything happens for a reason. Maybe God called you here today. I don't know. Thank you. Appreciate that. Yeah. But it's like you will continue to provide perspectives for me in my life that hold nothing but value. Like, I respect your opinion. I respect your advice, which is why I call you. You know, you're a very important person to me, and that's why I wanted to bring you on here, number one. And number two, you have provided so much insight and professional guidance for me in my career that it, like, I can't put a value on that. I can't put a dollar amount on that. And that's, I think that if more people had mentors like you, and if more people were like you and really thought, you know, kind of like the conversation that we had the other day, and I don't remember the nugget that came from it, but it was so good. And I was like, that is why he's my mentor. Like, having mentors like that in my life. And I think that, you know, with losing my dad and having someone like you, I'm not going to cry. But having someone like you is so important to me because I need that older male role model. And I think that in our society right now, we don't really value males as much as we should. And I think that that's wrong. I think that it's incorrect. I think that I gain strength from both men and women. And I think that both men and women benefit from both men and women. And I think that it's really stupid to think that we could survive without each other. We literally can't. And I think that there should be more emphasis put on strong males in our society that are role models. And I consider you to be one of those people.
Thank you, April.
Thank you for coming.
I really appreciate it. And I've enjoyed this. This has been really awesome. You know, let me just say one last thing. You know, men and women, it's people, right? It's just people. Everybody has value. Everybody does.
Yeah.
I mean, and you know, that's been a perspective of mine that, you know, it's immaterial. Again, it doesn't matter men, women, it's people.
Yeah.
It's good people. It's people that care and people that give, people that are charitable, people that spend the time trying to do things for others. Those are the people that I want to be around. Those are the people I admire. And you know, that's what's most important. That might be the reason why we're all here. Is just the amount of time that we spend trying to do things for others. And, You know, so that's a perspective, right? And, you know, I think the world would be a better place if we focus more on that.
Agreed. 100%.
Yeah.
With that, we'll close.
Okay. All right.
Check us out. So Jim O'Reilly has no social media, I don't think. Do you have any? Do you want to promote it? You want people to find you?
No.
Okay, that's what I thought.
I like the anonymity.
So, yeah, Jim O'Reilly does not.
I'm on LinkedIn. You can find me on LinkedIn.
I was going to say that. I was going to say the only thing he has is LinkedIn. So if you'd like to professionally find Jim O'Reilly, he is there. But I do appreciate you coming, and you will be coming back now that you okay. Now that you broke the seal, you will have to return.
Okay.
Check us out at www.biggirlpantspod.com. If you have any questions, send us an email at biggirlpantspod@gmail.com. And check us out anywhere you find your podcast, Spotify, Apple, and YouTube. And thank you.